Welcome to Season 3 of Busting Addiction and Its Myths, sponsored by Safe House Rehab Thailand, where we offer a modern approach to recovery, breaking with tradition by introducing new technologies that help disrupt the cycle of addiction. To learn more, visit us at safehouserehab.com and click on the video, or contact us at info@safehouserehab.com, and we'll tell you about our $1,000 airfare allowance and referral rewards program. My name is Bruno J., and here's why I created this podcast. Our research has shown that despite the opioid epidemic and the worldwide panic over the ravages of addiction, we didn't see that treatment centers were doing anything different to break the cycle more effectively and improve the odds of long-term success. So we have set out to do things differently and to let all those who love an addict or alcoholic know more about the advances in treatment that we represent. Here's what we're doing differently. We have designed our diagnostics and detox to isolate and treat opioid and multi-addiction, example, alcohol plus opioids plus speed, more effectively, given that these are the new challenges of addiction in the 21st century. We integrate leading-edge technology into the recovering process, thereby disrupting the disorder, speeding the recovery of brain health. Clients come to treatment with damaged brains. This is a given. We pay attention to the importance of dopamine and other ingredients vital to brain health recovery. Traditional rehabs don't provide anywhere near the tools and close guidance that clients truly need to help keep them clean and sober for life. We do it right. First, we advise our clients to go into a sober living facility to serve as a transition to normal life. And we absolutely outperform traditional rehabs when it comes to providing a structure for long-term recovery. So if you love an addict or alcoholic, and you feel like your loved one is sucking the oxygen out of your life, is stealing your money, stealing your peace of mind and your sanity, this podcast is for you. If you're feeling rage and shame and he or she is living rent-free in your head 24/7, this podcast is for you. I hope to have you gain a better understanding of the nature of addictive disorder and the invisible effect it has on your psyche. It's my fervent hope you also gain a little more compassion for your loved one and for yourself, in spite of this cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. To paraphrase an author in this space, we struggle because we love. Hello, Jay. My interview with Tim for Season 3, Episode 6. Hi, this is Bruno J., and in this episode, we'll be interviewing my good friend Tim, and I'd like to introduce him to you now. He's been a stalwart member of the fellowship and is the owner and operator of Promise View, a sober living facility in a great Midwestern city. So say hello, Tim, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing today, and then we'll go back to what life was like before.
Hi, my name is Tim. Thank you for having me on, Ron. I appreciate it. What I'm doing today is, as you had mentioned, I am the owner and I run a sober living house, Promise View, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as far as a outreach program for those that want a firmer foundation in their recovery after they go through detox and possible treatment. We also have other guys too that come in and just realize that living with a bunch of others that are trying to accomplish the day-to-day sober living with each other. It's just helpful to have other people along in the program with
sure,
you.
Sure, sure. And tell me a little bit about how many men you have typically when your house is full and what the typical daily routine might be. Let's say pick a middle of the week or pick Thursday because you have I know Thursday's a little bit special for you.
Sure. Our household's 14 gentlemen we can have. We've had some changes with the coronavirus. We're at a low count right now, but that's starting to change as far as the virus is being contained more. And our household takes the whole virus very seriously. What we do on Thursday nights is an AA meeting that is for the members of the House as well as the public. If people are in recovery, they can come to the House. A normal day, we require our guys to work, so a lot of times they are at the on the job, wherever they're working. Preferably on a first shift type job, and then they come home, we have dinner, guys go off to other AA meetings. It's up to them to go to an AA meeting or some type of 12-step meeting if they have narcotics or drugs as part of their substance abuse. They may be going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting.
Cool. So what happened? What was life like for you before you sobered up? And give us, you know, how long that was.
For me, it was 22 years. I've been sober, but before that, I don't know. Some of me our stories are typical. I grew up in a good family. Had good education, everything going for me, but there was something about, I even remember back to younger days, taking that first drink, and it just did something for me. It took away all my insecurities, all my fears, and just turned me into someone that I thought I wanted to be, but as time went on and as years went on, nothing good came from it. Relationships were destroyed. Work, any ambition I had was, my whole life revolved around alcohol and other drugs. So it definitely took me off the path that I was on for anything good to happen to my life, and I finally had enough of it, and fortunately had a moment of clarity that took me into a rehab type situation. It was like a 7-day detox, and after that I was at an AA meeting within 2 hours of leaving there, and got a sponsor at that meeting, and have been working with that sponsor ever since. And, you know, slowly but surely, good things started happening in my life and continue to happen.
Excellent. What was the moment of, describe the moment of clarity.
You know, I had been drinking, my last days and months of drinking had just gotten so bad that that's all I did. And there was one night that I can't even describe it. I just felt very clear in my thought, very clear in my decision making, and at that moment didn't have the urge to drink. I knew I had to get help, and made a phone call and scheduled a situation that I could go into the next day. It doesn't mean that I didn't stop for a few drinks before I got there, but I've been through a couple of rehabs, and I always thought that if you showed up to rehab sober, that would be scoring good points for you. And I learned they really didn't care at all. So, you know, I did make a stop or two before I went into that rehab. That's a little side story.
Yeah.
But, I kind of said goodbye to all my old friends, all my old drinks, and looked at them and said, I'll never drink you again. So, and I've stuck to that. Although, you know, I know that each day is precious for me, and at any given time, if I choose to have that one drink, that old life will come back to me quickly.
You said, Tim, that you had more than one try at rehab. Tell us a little bit about that part.
Well, a lot of it would have to do with legal troubles, driving while intoxicated. I did get involved with one rehab, but you know what? I was only doing it to get my driver's license back. I did not commit to true sobriety. It was just once again jumping through some hoops with the idea that in the end, if I stay away from alcohol, people would get off my back about my drinking and I could go back to doing that again.
Okay.
Responsibly and normally.
Right.
So I thought.
Right. In the middle of all of this, you mentioned that you had significant others, family, parents. I don't know if you were ever married or not. Tell us about the role of your loved ones and how those relationships actually operated while you were drinking and using. What were those relationships like?
Well, I left my initial parents at an early age. I mean, my father was one of the type that he said, you know, if you're gonna behave this way, this is my house, and you know, I have my rules. So I moved out of there shortly after I was 18 years old, and you know, I probably drove my parents crazy because you know, then I was living on my own. And I could keep that. It was always a well-planned design that I could keep the party life away from them. And you know, the next thing you just start seeing your family on holidays, and sometimes you wouldn't even do that. So there was distancing, as many of us do, you know. Or if we had some family gathering, well, it was always an effort to, you know, not drink and
right,
go through whatever event was going on, and then would pick up afterwards. So those visits were always short. I was a young parent shortly after that, and it basically was taking care of my son and getting his mom through school, and then I worked. I did not go to school myself, but after work, which was a second shift job, that's when I do most of my drinking then. But that's when I was younger. That's when I was 19, 20.
Uh-huh.
As so many younger people do it. You're young and your friends are in college and they're drinking too, so you think it's normal. And hey, I went to work and I got paid and I paid bills, and I always thought, well, I will slow my drinking down one day when I get older, which never really happened.
Right. So how old were you when you sobered up?
I was 38 years old.
Okay.
Besides having moments maybe a month or two here and there, usually following
right,
some illegal thing I had done. You know, it's when you're sitting in jail, you always come to your senses and you're good for a while, you know. You pick up where you left off pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Previous conversations with you, it sounded like you knew, you had some good insights about the concept of codependency. Can you talk about codependency in the context of a family who, otherwise normal, has one alcoholic or addict living with them, and in this case, let's say they're living under the same roof? What sorts of things happen in a codependent relationship?
Well, unfortunately, you know, out of love, the family members try to deal with the individual or individuals that are using, and it almost becomes a norm to them, and until very bad things start happening in their lives, and they try to help and control the individual by making suggestions of, you know, not drinking so much, or maybe they're finding, at this point, they're finding them a job or whatever. But what they don't realize is that the family itself is getting sick along with the individual that is abusing, you know, doing the substance abuse, whatever their substance might be.
So we call this a family disease. You've heard that before as well, right? Everybody gets sick. What are some of the manifestations of this disease showing up in otherwise normal people? How does that show up?
Well, you see, you know, anything from if it's a husband and wife situation, you know, once the wife is calling the boss to make up excuses that the husband is sick,
right,
or parents are making up excuses as to why their son didn't come to Christmas with the family or didn't do this, you know, all of a sudden they'll find themselves telling those little white lies. Oh, they didn't feel good, or they were busy, or, you know, things like this. Even as far as monetary, with some legal problems, you know, the parents will end up by bailing the kid out of jail or putting them through expensive rehab programs, you know, doing almost anything, I was going to say, within their power to try to correct the situation.
Okay.
There you go. It's like they're really, what they have to realize is they are powerless over that situation,
yes,
an individual.
Talk about the role of fear and resentment in that context. Can you talk about that?
Even on a personal note, in fact, I just left an AA meeting that was exactly that subject matter that we were talking about. In that, at least in my personal experience, you know, I was actually afraid to stop drinking because it seemed like I didn't know how to live a normal life, you know. And as far as the family goes, as far as codependency, my gosh, they live in fear all the time as far as their loved one being out there, and parents worrying about, are they coming home, or are they going to die, especially when we're talking about substances like heroin.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to so many wives and parents with the sober living situation. We talked to far many family members than we ever do take guys coming in to live in the house.
You told me the story of how bizarre some of these families are. God bless them. They're just sick. We're not judging. But tell the story about, you know, a couple of situations where it felt like they just wanted to dump their kid there and leave. Is that the, did that happen often enough?
Yeah. There's these families, the mom and dad have just had enough. They've been doing and dealing with this for years and years, and they are so affected by the alcoholic or the addict that they really, you know, I talk to them about getting involved with Al-Anon because they need just as much help as the individual that is the victim of the substance abuse.
Right.
And a lot of times, the misconception of sober living is that, oh, they're just going to go there, and they almost consider us a babysitting service.
Somehow, right,
we're going to cure the whole situation. And I've had situations where parents have wanted to write a check for 6 months to a year for their child to stay with us, but actually, we do a week-to-week bed license, And one of our rules is that we don't refund any money. That's why we only go week to week, because I'm not out to gouge people of their hard right. money. But I remember the father that was willing to write a check for 6 months, and I said, well, keep in mind, if Billy over here doesn't follow some of these rules, he has to leave, and then we keep your money. And the dad just looked at me and said, I'll write you a check for a week. So he knew the odds of his son from past history yeah. Following any guidance or rules, as simple as making your bed daily or doing your dishes after they're done, would be a miracle if this young man would even do that. So, and they do. They really expect us just to, that I have a magic wand, you know, and it's recovery's work. It's not as bad as living the life using, as one person recently said to me, it's a lot easier to stay sober than it is to get sober. Because many of us spend years trying to get sober.
I can't resist asking you the story of the parents who dumped off little Johnny and went on a cruise. You got to tell that story. It's too good. It's just too good.
There's a few stories that are similar to that. That the parents actually, their child had just caused them so much turmoil for years and years, that when they finally got them registered into our house, they went on a vacation to almost celebrate because they now had free time. And in fact, there was one set of parents we had a very hard time getting a hold of for months because they were just going everywhere without. I don't know what I can compare it to in our life. I guess retirement, you know, that we work our butts off and then in the end we retire, and that's when we take a cruise or get a condo or a timeshare or something like that. But they had just been so taxed by their efforts and what they had to do in dealing with them. But see, this is where they need help. This is where, just as the alcoholic yeah. or addict needs yeah. to be around people that suffer from substance abuse, they need to be around people that will understand
yeah.
them. And the only one that's going to understand them is someone that has gone through it before. So we're big fans of Al-Anon and getting these family members involved with Al-Anon, and even some of their younger siblings or the kids getting them involved with Al-Anon.
Yeah. You know, what you said is important for our audience to hear, particularly the audience who are parents and loved ones of an addict or an alcoholic, and that is, would you agree that many of these parents feel like they're the only ones or they're alone, and then they're surprised that there are many, many people who share the same sort of suffering?
It's true, you know, and it's almost as the alcoholic goes into this, he thinks he's the only one with the problem until he starts listening to other people going, wow, that sounds just like me. And on the other hand, the parents, they feel very trapped, you know, and there's shame that goes along with it, and there's fear of judgment that people will look at them, they're bad parents. And yet they find by getting together with other people that have been through this and are further along than they are.
Right.
You know, I just got a call tonight from a heroin addict who was upset because his parents finally threw him out, you know. And the way I got it in an email, and he just was kind of shocked and insulted that they actually asked them to leave. Well, this is some of the tough love that's needed, but at the same time, I tell candidates, it's for Al-Anon, that you go there and they'll teach you a constructive and positive way to love your son or daughter.
There you go.
You know? Because far too many times, what we think is helping them is really just adding to the problem.
Right. Correct. So what would you say on two topics? One is not forgetting about love, right, and compassion. And the other is to just to take away the three, I'll be arbitrary. Let's see, three basic rules on what to do about your addict or alcoholic son who's living under the same roof with you.
He's under your roof still because you do love him. And that is the thing that any good parent is doing. We want the best for our children, but that tends to get clouded as time goes on, and the family becomes conditioned to this behavior as being a part of the norm of the family. As far as what they should do is, they really need to start taking care of themselves. When in fact, they're usually preoccupied by trying to take care of the addict. You know, getting involved with some family counseling, possibly some type of intervention, reaching out to behavioral health professionals to say what we should do. And even on getting back to Al-Anon, you know, that's not anything that your insurance is going to charge you or you're going to have to pay costs for. You might as well go and
learn something.
Go to an Al-Anon meeting, see what that's about, and start learning about what is the most productive way to handle the situation.
That's great.
Everyone thinks it's about getting help for the addict. You've got to get help for yourself first.
Tim, would you say? Oh, let me just ask you because I don't really know. You're in a much better position to know this, having worked in the field, if you will, or been a part of recovery for quite some time on a more organized and formal basis. Does it surprise you that families who suffer, you know, from this disorder because of an alcoholic or addict in the house, that they let stuff go without really learning anything more, like reaching out to a professional or going to Al-Anon or going to a behavioral health clinic? It sounds to me like they've suffered on their own and they never bothered to look for help for years.
Yeah, they seem to dump it on the individual that is the alcoholic or the addict that they have to change. And one of the things that we suggest to a lot of the parents or wives that we talk to is to pick up the book Alcoholics Anonymous and read the first 164 pages. This is just a wealth of information as to understanding why their loved one is doing what they're doing, because otherwise it just seems like insane behavior. It just becomes so familiar and normal to them that they don't expect different types of behavior.
Can I also use this opportunity to plug a couple of other useful books that I have found? We talked a little bit about the one book on A Family's Guide to Intervention, whether it's formal or not, is called Love First by Jeff and Deborah Jay. In that book, Tim, I got a really good education on how an alcoholic or addict thinks, right? And one of the great insights was the alcoholic or the addict doesn't think that he is the problem. He thinks you are the problem because you're in the way of him getting high.
Right. It's a lot easier when you're in the life and in the trap of addiction.
Right.
This is one of the things we do. We point fingers, we accuse people, we guilt people.
Yep.
We start gaslighting them.
Yes.
And, you know, over time, it's it's effective.
Yeah, it works. It works.
We as addicts and alcoholics are master manipulators.
Correct.
To defend our egos, to defend our using. It's insanity is what it is.
The second book, Tim, that I got a lot out of, and I read this while I was making my journey into Al-Anon over, you know, a loved one at home. I'd been sober about 10 years at this point. But somebody recommended this book by Melody Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-Y, called Codependent No More. The subtitle is How to Stop Controlling Others and Start Taking Care of Yourself. And so that's right on the theme that you were talking about as well.
Right, because if you're not, you know, like they say on the airplane, just your own oxygen mask before helping others.
There you go.
It's just a cliche thing that we say in AA and in Al-Anon, but if you're not fit and ready to go, how are you going to help anybody else? Because the addict and the alcoholic are going to do whatever they're going to do. You have no control over them, whether they're going to get sober or not, so it's really up to you. The only thing you have control of is getting help for yourself.
Perfect. I think we got to wrap it up. You're chock full of good insight, Tim. I really appreciate you doing this. God bless you, then.
This is my way of giving back and being grateful for the sober life that I'm living today.
Beautiful. Thanks a lot, Tim. Have a good night. Take care.
Take care.
So what did we learn from Tim today? Number one is the secret is there is no secret. Everything an addict or alcoholic needs to know has been written and published from 1939 until now. Two, the longer an addict alcoholic stays in a somewhat controlling recovering environment, the greater the chances of long-term success. Three, the family has no idea and will often deny that they are as sick as the addict, that they are as powerless over addiction as is the addict. Four, the family member doesn't realize that she needs to shift the focus from the addict to herself to start the healing process. And five, there is a lot of help available, from Al-Anon to Codependence Anonymous to counselors trained in addiction. AODA stands for Alcohol or Drug Addiction Trained Professionals, and there are many of them available. Thank you for tuning in today. It's my fervent hope we've given you new insight and new hope that will lighten your burden. For our hearts go out to all who suffer the effects of addictive disorder. Please give us your feedback at info@safehouserehab.com. By all means, ask us any question you like, and we'll answer on air if you will. And if you want to leave us your first name and city, we'll recognize you too, of course. This podcast is sponsored by safehouserehab.com, where we take a modern approach to recovery, something all families of those who suffer deserve. Tune in next week for more.